welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. My very special guest today in studio for the first time on the Vinnie Eastwood Show is Dr. Green, New Zealand's most noted cannabis activist, who in my analysis has generated more media hype about the issue around cannabis than any other activist in this country's history. I think he might have been arrested as many times as almost all of the other previous cannabis activists combined together. Has started a New Zealand's first big full-scale coffee shop called The Dactory, which has been shut down but is now being reopened. The driver of the normal cannabis has gone on tours around the country, including a relief mission to Christchurch, where he held out, what did you give away, like a pound of marijuana to those poor and unfortunate people who lost their grows in the quakes. Dr. Green, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie. It's a long time that I've known you since the time that we opened the Dactory, which is almost 5 years ago now.
Mm.
So we've all come some distance. Here you are with your own worldwide, international, and probably universal. I think they're listening to you on Mars, Vinnie. If anybody on Mars is going to listen to anybody, it's going to be you. So, because you're a little out of this world.
Yeah.
But it's a pleasure to be here in your bedroom.
Well, why don't you give us a wee bit of an update about what's actually been happening with you? Because I drove past the Dactory a couple of weeks ago and took some pictures because the Dactory sign had been getting taken down and everything.
Yep.
I mean, but firstly, before we go into it, I wanted you to actually give your background. Before you were a cannabis activist,
mm-hmm.
You helped to actually affect law change in, say, Saturday shopping, for example. Would you be able to
explain
a little bit about that?
That was during the 70s, the 1970s. It was, since the Second World War, it was illegal in New Zealand to open your shops on Saturday or Sunday. And when I got into the retail business in the mid-70s, that was still the case. Shops were not allowed to open on the weekend, and I couldn't understand why. So we did the old Nike trick, and we just did it. Mm-hmm. We opened our doors, and authorities started coming after us. And we countered with other strategies, and after a few years, we were successful, and laws were changed, and I sort of got the taste, if you will, for law reform. It was quite an exciting time, but I did think that it was relatively easy to change laws at that time, but I've subsequently shown that it's not easy at all, mm-hmm. and it really depends on official line and what propaganda is being put out at any given time. So, yeah, we started with Saturday shopping in the 70s. In the 1980s, I started New Zealand's first casino. Mm-hmm. I bought a ship. She was 157 feet long, carried 120 passengers plus crew, and we sailed outside our territorial waters into international waters. We gambled all night, which was perfectly legal, and came back in the morning, and they went fine for a little while until the government decided that we were an embarrassment to them and closed us down.
Well, didn't they sabotage you with some kind of cooks and stewards union or something?
We had some union strife, that's true. It wasn't the cooks and stewards, but it was problems with one area of the crew. And, yeah, they pulled some strikes and it was all designed to embarrass and cause us financial hardship, and they were ultimately successful. We were forced to close, and as a result, everybody went broke, and it was just a sad time in my life.
Mm.
But within a couple of years, the government had seen the light and issued a casino license to one of their large company mates, and of course, we've had a casino or casinos in this country ever since.
Mm.
But Then, of course, I moved to Australia and I actually started smoking cannabis when I was 39 years old. My adult son came to visit and one night he said, do you want to try some of this? And I knew he smoked cannabis, but I had never tried it. And so he was 21, I was 39. He put something in a pipe and said, toke on this. Or words to that effect. I don't even know what words were being used at that time. I've learnt the lingo subsequently about all the nicknames relating to this wonderful, miraculous herb that we enjoy so much. Mm-hmm. But we had a smoke and we talked and laughed and had interaction that fathers and sons, you know, once in their life, have to become a friend instead of father-son. And that's the night that we became mates. And I woke up the next morning and I was no longer a prohibitionist. I woke up the next morning thinking, that was pretty damn good last night. And I'm not sure what it is that people find offensive about cannabis.
Up until and that point, were you a bit of a rampant prohibitionist?
Like, I was your a prohibitionist, oh yes. There was a time when I was doing the Saturday shopping business in our business. We had a shoplifter caught one day, and I called the police to deal with this shoplifter. And before the police arrived, he tried to throw a bag of green leafy substance out of his pocket under my couch in the office, and I thought, I saw him, and I, hello, hello, what's going on here then? And when the police arrived, I happily handed this over to the police and said, look what this man had in his pocket. And it turns out he was prosecuted not for shoplifting, but prosecuted for possession of drugs. And I went home that particular night and sat at the dinner table with my family and my children, and proudly told them about what I had done, how I had caught this evil drug user person. And everybody thought, Dad, husband, you're doing a pretty damn good job. And I've regretted it ever since I learnt the truth about cannabis. And so I guess I go a little bit over the top now in my campaigning to change the law, because I'm embarrassed that through my ignorance, if you will, I was happy to see this person locked up whom I thought was evil, and I've subsequently learned, of course, that's not true. So, yeah, that was my introduction to cannabis, and I've not looked back. And, yep, I'm deeply involved in the campaign to legalize in this country and worldwide, for that matter, and there is an international movement, and everybody in the movement, Benny, right now is saying to each other, we're very close. The tipping point was Colorado and Washington, and America's been chipping away at these prohibition laws for some time, which is only fair, of course, because America are the ones that introduced these prohibition laws on cannabis in the first instance. So it's right and proper that they are leading the way out of this darkness, if you will. So, yeah, it's exciting times for everybody.
You know, there was an article in The Guardian, I think it might have even be this morning, saying that the drug law has become, the prohibition laws have become, quote, redundant. And I find that this is like a long time coming, because you've had years of activism and mainstream media attention on this issue, and even the Television 3 debate just recently, I believe, had a huge audience, as well as a 70% right of reply to say, let's legalize cannabis. And the thing that frustrated me the most about that wasn't necessarily that the negative side of the debate was simply just sitting there lying their ass off in order to get people to believe the deception of the cannabis laws. But the fact that Peter Dunn, the associate health minister who's been a backbone of the anti-cannabis movement for, basically in this country, he's the linchpin. And when he comes on, in response to 70% of respondents saying we want to legalize cannabis, it's just a simple, nah.
Peter Dunn is no longer the Associate Minister of Health. Peter Dunn has been caught up in a scandal of his own making, and some would use the old term hoist by his own petard. The man has controlled cannabis law reform in this country for the last 14 years, and it's just delightful that he's actually having, I beg your pardon, not 14, it was the last 6 years of the Labor government and 4 years now under the National government. So 10 years he's been controlling the lack of any movement on law reform in this country. But he's no longer a minister. And the new Associate Minister of Health is proceeding with this new legislation of the Psychoactive Substances Bill. And we're heading off with our campaign bus to Parliament next week. And we will be seeking to provide some information to the new Associate Minister of Health and pointing out to him that with the synthetic cannabis that's available in this country that is causing some health problems with some people, and the psychoactive bill, of course, is designed to regulate the synthetic cannabis and party pill markets. But the reality is that there would be no market for synthetic cannabis if real herbal cannabis was legally available in the marketplace. So we're going to point that out to him in words of one syllable, because that's what's needed when you talk to members of Parliament. Mm-hmm. Just little short words that they tend to understand.
Words that rhyme with rock or pit.
Yep. And we will encourage him to do the right thing by New Zealanders and recognise that worldwide the phenomenon is cannabis laws are being relaxed. Cannabis is being accepted more and more, certainly by the community, but progressively by authorities, those that pretend to be in charge, cannabis, in fact, is a medicine, and there is absolutely no sound reason to continue this lie on lie that we've been suffering since the 1920s. Mm. So it's exciting times for us all, and I confidently predict that worldwide cannabis will be legal in all democracies within the next 5 years.
Mm. Well, I would hope that's the case, and it appears to me, though, like it's interesting that we're talking about what was this, the Psychoactive Substances Bill is being passed in a parliament full of psychos who are very active in the government. And
I do tend to relate to this bill as being the psycho bill, and most people know what I'm talking about. Anything that's passed by some of our members of parliament can be classed as a psycho bill. So,
yeah.
It's exactly what it is.
And what's the exact intention of this bill? Is it just to say, oh, look, these synthetic cannabis drugs are very dangerous?
Actually, it's to regulate these. And this is a first worldwide, which is not a bad thing, I have to say. But what they are saying is that these artificial cannabis or the synthetic drugs that are being produced now and that are technically legal, all of them will be made illegal, but there will be a process for the companies that produce them to apply for a license to sell their product. And in order to achieve that, they will have to go through a fairly strict testing regime to ensure that there are no bad side effects. And when there is a synthetic cannabis product that successfully goes through the testing regime and is permitted to be sold on the market, then that's likely to create for that producer a worldwide market. Certainly, it'll be available for sale in New Zealand, but it's likely to be picked up by other countries if it's been legally produced here. But the real position is that if cannabis, the raw cannabis that we all love so much, if that was available legally, there would be absolutely no demand for the synthetic cannabis. A spokesman for the synthetic cannabis market said on the TV recently with that program that you referred to, said that they don't have a synthetic cannabis problem in California or Washington or Colorado or other places where medicinal cannabis is readily available, because nobody in their right mind would want to smoke this synthetic manufactured product if the real product is available, because the real product is our friend and it is our medicine and we enjoy it recreationally as well.
Have you noticed that what we try to synthesize and make ourselves becomes inherently more damaging than the natural thing from which we extracted it from?
That's true.
All right. Well, there's a general lesson in that for you, ladies and gentlemen. Natural is good, artificial, not good. I think it's the same with people. You know, if somebody's natural and they're actually a decent person, that kind of thing, as opposed to somebody who's artificial, who's got some kind of personality disorder that wants to kill you, those aren't the very nice people at all. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. This is a listener-supported show, so if you'd like to go to the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, we archive every single page. Commercial-free versions are available too there if you subscribe or donate. And this is the way that we keep all the bills paid so that we can bring on wonderful activists from all over the world from a whole huge range of subjects, so that every single day when you tune in, you will be listening to a diverse voice with incredible information and somewhat fabulous experiences from which you can actually derive some form of wisdom from. After all, if you listen to the same person over and over again all the time, like myself, for example, you don't really learn a whole bunch, particularly if that person's yourself. Right, my very special guest is Dr. Green, noted and famed and infamous cannabis activist right here in New Zealand. Welcome back to the show. We were talking just before we went away from break that the stuff that we synthesize from nature is actually worse for you than things that are actually found in nature. And in terms of the medicinal side of things, this plant is the most important medicinal plant in the world, period.
That's fair. It has been said that if cannabis didn't exist in the world and it was discovered in the deepest, darkest Amazon jungles, it would be hailed internationally as a wonder drug has been discovered. The fact that it has been demonized for a number of years is to the eternal shame of those people that badmouthed it right at the beginning. The reasons that cannabis is illegal has absolutely nothing at all to do with cannabis. It's all about politics and power and money. So cannabis is our friend and a friend of the community, and it is evil that for close to 90 years worldwide, it has been demonized, and millions and millions of people have been locked in jail all over the world. I myself have had far too much time in jail. You know, if you took my cannabis convictions out of my criminal record, I'm 63 years old, and if I had no cannabis convictions, I would have one conviction: failing to keep left, which in our country we drive on the left, but failing to keep left, $40 fine. A minor traffic offence is my criminal conviction. But with my cannabis convictions, I've done a number of years in jail, both in America and here in New Zealand. Cannabis is one of those products that has been demonised and has led to major distortions, I think, in our society, all due to a few rich people trying to get richer.
Do you know who these rich people are?
Oh, yes. It was during the 1920s. William Randolph Hearst, was responsible for demonizing cannabis. He demonized marijuana, which, of course, is the was the Mexican nickname for cannabis.
Which means Mary Jane.
Mary Jane is what it means.
Pronounced marijuana.
Yep. And marijuana was demonized in the 1920s in the U.S. as being this new evil drug that had hit the market. And it wasn't until a few days before it was made illegal that the American Medical Association were made aware that they were about to make marijuana illegal, but actually they were talking about cannabis. Hang on, they said. That's our medicine. A large number of our medicines are based on extracts from the cannabis plant. You can't make that illegal. But when the juggernaut of politics and governments roll over all the minor opposition, these little voices were lost. And so we've had, since the 1920s worldwide, this ridiculous lie that has been perpetrated on the human race.
So somebody who is perhaps a major pharmaceutical company would make a shockingly large amount of money if the alternatives to their drugs didn't exist or were made illegal, wouldn't they?
But it wasn't the pharmaceuticals that arranged or worked towards demonizing and making cannabis illegal, because the pharmaceutical companies didn't have the power back then. That's why cannabis was mostly the medicine. Mm. It was for other reasons. The petrochemical industry, for example, they wanted to see hemp closed down, banned. They didn't want to see paper manufacturing occurring using hemp. They wanted to maintain the trees. William Hearst owned vast forests and newsprint manufacturing plants. Well, when you've got two-thirds of your assets tied up in, or two-thirds of your wealth tied up in these two main areas of your assets, and there's a threat that your forests will become worthless and your paper manufacturing plants become redundant, then you can't possibly keep your newspaper business alive. So he used his newspaper business to demonize the products. And it was all designed to close down the hemp business, that is, the cannabis plant with low THC, without the psychoactive properties. The thing that we'd used for thousands of years to make rope and fabrics and
sails.
I mean, canvas is a word that's derived from cannabis. So it's been a friend of humankind since records began.
Mm. Since the days of the pharaohs.
Since the date of the pharaohs. And yes, they're finding stashes, sometimes still green plants, stashed in tombs in different parts of the world.
A bit expensive for a stash tin, don't you
think? Well, yes. I mean, when you've got 2,000 and 3,000 and 4,000 year old weed. I mean, I personally have smoked, the oldest weed I've smoked was something like 25 or 30 years old. A grower used to bury his crop each year, and one day he was digging a hole for his latest crop, and blow me down if he didn't find a tin that he had mislaid something like 25 or 30 years earlier. He had a date written on the can. And he pulled this bud out, which ended up on in my hand, well, a small portion of it, and it looked quite dark and black, in fact, but it tasted beautiful. It tasted, if I was a drinker, you could say it was a fine wine that had been left to mature. And in this instance, it seemed to have happened with cannabis as well. I don't know whether that's regular or not, but
What about the strength of it? Was it
I'd been smoking for some hours a wide range of different cannabis with this particular person that I was with, so I can't say that I got any more stoned than I already was. So I can't tell you about the strength of it.
Oh, well, irrelevant, I think. Because I think the real crux of the issue here is that you got people's rights being violated, okay? And most importantly, I think the right to life, and this is what most people don't really get about cannabis, is that it's not necessarily just because you're recreationally using it, not hurting anybody or anything like that. There are actually people out there who literally die if they don't have their cannabis. And this is what the law really, really affects.
This is true, and it's one of those twists and turns when we are fighting to end this prohibition, that there are many, many people that are caught up in the illegality. They have a lack of access to the plant. They face imprisonment. There's plenty of people in this country and elsewhere around the world who have used the plant as a medicine, that it's necessary to use it as a medicine for their health and well-being. But nonetheless, the law is what it is, and people get locked up in jail for it. And I think that is to the eternal shame of our political leaders, no matter which country you come from. If you have political leaders that are making decisions based on falsehoods, on rumours and hearsay and nonsense without actually looking at the science. I mean, you cannot base social policy on anything but the science. And scientists today say that cannabis is less harmful in the community than many legal products, whether it be tobacco or alcohol being the two main ones. But cannabis is less harmful to the individual and to the community than that. And the effects
of prohibition. It's less harmful than water.
Well, yes, people die from drinking too much water. There are a wide variety of different products that are dangerous to your health if used to excess. Cannabis, on the other hand, there's no one ever died from an overdose of cannabis.
Apparently, the overdose of cannabis manifests itself as feeling sleepy, hungry, and then going to bed.
Yes, but in order for it to be dangerous for your health, perhaps leading to death, you actually have to smoke, and this is only an estimate because no one's ever been able to do it, but you actually have to smoke something like 30 to 40,000 joints, cigarette-size cannabis joints, 30 to 40,000. Do you hear that number? In 15 minutes. Now, you can't physically do that in 15 minutes. I mean, I have trouble smoking a single joint, let alone 30 or 40,000 joints. So if you can't physically do it, then you have to say it's an impossibility. There is nothing dangerous about overdosing on cannabis. As you rightly say, the worst that's going to happen is you'll get sleepy and fall asleep.
Yeah, and this reminds me of trials that were conducted with intravenous vitamin C that Dr. Thomas Levy talked about, that they had a test group of people and they inserted up to, I think it was like 40 pounds of intravenous vitamin C right into their veins over a period of about 18 months with no notable side effects.
Okay.
Right, it's one of these two substances, cannabis being one, vitamin C being the other, for which there is no known lethal dose.
Okay.
It just can't be done. And I think that's what's going to happen here, or at least what I reckon should happen, is we should be taking chemicals and toxins and things of this nature that are currently in our food supply and our water and in the air and all over the place, and try and make sure that these things actually get solved. He's going to have a wee bit of a cough now. Go off for a bit. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, can you think for a moment of any other instance in human history where something that will actually save your life has been mandated by the government as something that is illegal? All right. And what is the inherent hypocrisy of that? Think about this. Like, if you were going into I don't know, surgery, and you had a wound that needed to be cut out. And the government, instead of allowing you to cut out, say, a bullet wound or something of that nature with a scalpel, they outlaw scalpels because they can be dangerous. All right? And this is essentially the exact same mentality when you're making cannabis illegal. It's just like, oh, it could be dangerous. Well, actually, it could be. If you were really, 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 really stupid, because I don't believe everybody should be smoking cannabis all day, every day, operating heavy machinery and so on and so forth, and smoking in childcare centres and things like that, and passing joints to the kids. No. Talk about reasonable adults. And I watched a video last night, Dr. Green, about... Mm-hmm. How it was for children back in the 50s and 60s and even earlier, whereby the world wasn't coated in bubble wrap for you, and there was virtually no obesity because kids were always outside playing. People took responsibility for themselves. You know, people failed at things, people succeeded at things, and they just had to frickin' deal with it. Nowadays, you've got all these frickin' distractions. There's no real social interaction going on anymore to great degrees. And I think humanity's really basically deteriorating. And if there's one thing I know about weed, it's this. It brings people together.
I agree with you entirely, Vinny. I was born in 1950, so your comments are pretty much accurate. We ate healthy food. We ate food that, in a lot of cases, was grown in our own gardens. We didn't have the processed foods and the highly refined foods available in those days. And you're right, we didn't have lots of fat people. And there's no question that the modern diet is as responsible for the obesity epidemic that we have. But it's not controlled. We have foods that are unhealthy for the community. And I don't want to get into that debate because it's about, you know, how healthy and how beneficial is cannabis to the community. And demonizing it as it's been done for 90 plus years is really what it's all about. We're having to overcome prejudices to bring us to the point where communities around the world are starting to demand change. And Colorado and Washington showed us the way.
Healthy states indeed. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. You can check out the archives there. Also on YouTube, Mr. News Guerrilla Media is the YouTube channel. Links on the homepage. We'll be right back.
Just in time, head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. Can't do this all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm not Superman, but laser beams do shoot out of my eyes if I ever see David Rockefeller walking the street, yo. And my very special guest is the Super DAC Man. During Halloween, he dresses up as Count Dacula, saying, "I want to smoke your blood." It's DAC Green.
All right. And other suitable lies like that are the reason why we're illegal.
Yes.
You speak like a member of the establishment, Vinny, telling lies about people. But, yes, we do smoke some DAC. That's true. Let's talk about
The Dactory.
The Dactory. People, first of all, you will probably have some listeners that aren't familiar with the term DAC.
Ah, yes.
And just to clarify that, DAC is the New Zealand, and it's typically or uniquely a New Zealand nickname for cannabis, is the word DAC, spelled D-A-K. It is a word that entered the New Zealand language before the 1900s. It came from South Africa. It's based on the...
Dacha.
Dacha, that's it. But New Zealand diggers in the Boer War in South Africa were not able to pronounce it Dacha because it takes a bit of a throat thing. So it became DAC, and that's been the name ever since. As I said, a uniquely New Zealand nickname. So a Dactory is a name that we invented when we were coming up with names for a club. We thought it would be fun if we could rent a factory. And then one of our people said we would call it a Dactory, and it just made sense, and it was a lovely name. So as a name for our cannabis club, the Dactory became synonymous with that movement. So we opened in November, 4.5 years ago, in Auckland, and we finally, late last year, were closed down by the police after more than 4 years. We'd had a couple of prosecutions. I spent a little time in jail, but we were a full-on cannabis club. And we openly sold cannabis from a dispensary. And most of the people that came to our club, other New Zealanders, had never seen more than one strain of cannabis at a time. I remember you, Vinny, coming to film the opening. And at opening, we had a range of about 12 different cannabis strains on display. And you were so excited taking film of all of this, and you've made some lovely films and put them up on the internet. Mm-hmm. We had people that were coming in and just standing there with their mouth open, not quite dribbling, but mentally at least.
Well, they couldn't dribble.
Drooling.
They couldn't dribble because of the cotton mouth.
That's right. That's right. And to see this display of a variety of different cannabis strains was quite exciting for people.
I remember one time there was 21 strains.
Yes, we did. We built it up till we had about 21. I think 25 was the most that we ever had on any given day, 25 different strains. But it was lovely, and it was a very adult way to consume cannabis, that you could walk into a place that was similar to an alcohol establishment, but we have no alcohol. We don't allow alcohol near our premises. We don't think the two mix. Alcohol gives people a different vibe, and people in the cannabis culture don't really relate to that alternative vibe. That's for drinkers to enjoy their thing. But we have a variety of different strains, and people enjoy that. But the politics became involved. I got released from jail last year, and 9 days after my release, the police raided our premises and made it clear in words of one syllable that was it. It was over. They were closing us down. They wanted us out of their district. So we did. We stayed for a while. We kept in their face, but it just became this constant look, on a weekly basis, the police would come around, we'd be closed, but they would come in, and under the terms of my bail conditions, they were permitted to check the premises. And they took full advantage of that and brought drug dogs in and loads of police on a regular basis to search our premises, and all designed to just be harassment to move us out of their district. So finally, we did. We moved a few months ago, and then last month, we located new premises in what we think is an ideal location in a small town in the centre of the North Island called Taumarunui, a small town that I happened to grow up in. And I was back visiting and we came across these premises that were formerly used as part of a freezing works. There was a cafeteria and office block. And it's 1,500 square metres. It's twice the size of the old Dactory. And there was a deal to be done, so we did it. And we take over in a couple of weeks these new premises. We plan to spend about 4 months, 4.5 months, renovating and painting and cleaning up. Not a great deal to do, but enough for a small group of dedicated volunteers to keep us busy for a little while. And then on the 19th of November this year, we will, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we will have a grand opening of Dactory Mark II, the new and improved version. And at 4 o'clock on the 19th of November will be exactly 5 years to the minute since we opened the Auckland Dactory. And so we're able to continue this, and we're not going away. This time we own our premises. There will be no landlord telling us to move on. And our people will gather together. Our members of our club will be travelling through this town as they go elsewhere, and they will call in and support us because we will be the beacon for law reform. And after law has been reformed, then we will continue to be relevant by running a cannabis hemp operation there with a wide variety of hemp products, including a wide range of cannabis. That's what we're looking to achieve. So it's an exciting time. The law is getting close to change around the world, and with the pressure that we bring to bear in this country, we expect it to happen within the next very short space of time.
Mm-hmm. I liken this to the quickening that's been happening with fluoride, for example, being taken out of the water in New Plymouth and then Hamilton, and people who have been trying to get it, campaign to get it out of the water for a long time. And I said to them, look, you know, the fight's not over. You've just got to keep getting the pressure on. As soon as you've got successes, that's actually when you need to fight a lot harder. And I believe the same is true of cannabis at this particular point in time, is that despite the fact that it's not legal yet, you can't let that discourage you. In fact, the more pressure that they bring to bear on you, the harder you need to fight, because it means that you're winning.
Yes, of course. And let's be realistic. Police around the world are facing increasing pressure on their budgets. Prisons are costing more and more money to keep open and keep incarcerating people. There is a recognition that it is an absolute waste of taxpayers' money to continue seeking to enforce the unenforceable. We've got something like 7,000 police officers in total in this country. We have a population of over 4 million people spread throughout the country. We've got areas in this country that mankind is yet to cast their eyes upon. So how do authorities think it's going to be possible to stamp out cannabis use in the future? They can't even keep it out of high security prisons. And if you can't keep cannabis out of high security prisons, how can you possibly expect to keep it out of the community? And with that sort of argument and the desire to have a controlled and regulated market, that's more likely to keep it out of the hands of children. And with education, we will be able to support people that may from time to time have issues and health issues and find cannabis is not actually right for them. During the time that we were operating our club, every now and then we'd have somebody come to us and say, look, I'm not feeling well, I've been doing this or I've been acting a little crazy, and cannabis is just not good for me. And I would encourage them not to actually consume, and if that's what it takes, because it's not right for everybody. But for the majority of people, it is a medicine and it is fun.
Yeah, exactly. But despite the fact that it might not be right for everybody, I'm sure jail is right for nobody who smokes cannabis.
Absolutely. That's the last place that we should be sending people.
Now, speaking of which, there has, ironically, been a health benefit with your recent stint in jail that you've managed to give up smoking.
I have. The day that I was incarcerated was the last day that tobacco smoking was permitted in New Zealand prisons. And so to be locked up and have no smell of tobacco around, I didn't really have a major problem.
All right.
So I gave it up.
That's a $90,000 quit smoking program paid for by the New Zealand government. We'll be right back after the break. Number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest for 2 hours today in studio is the illustrious, the innocuous Dr. Green.
Yep, that's me.
I think that's a good introduction. You think, you know, industrious, innocuous.
Iniquitous.
Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous, yes, there you go.
Yeah.
All the big words. Anything bigger than marmalade is a good word to be using.
Oh, I completely agree. I do think that when it comes to the daiquiri, what I was wondering is, look, it's about business, isn't it? That's what cannabis legalization should really be about, taking it out of the criminal sector and putting it into a legal, business-minded, regulated market. And I think the thing that attracted me to the daiquiri at the first, other than the fact that I got busted for pot and really hated the cannabis laws and wanted to do something about it and contribute in some way, was that I felt that a business actually needed to be established that was legitimate, moral, ethical, so on and so forth, to provide a good example of what actually works in terms of cannabis retail.
Yep. And that was all part of the reasons that we decided to proceed and open such a place. I mean, what we were really looking for in the first instance was a mechanism to keep our campaign vehicle, our large bus, that was all beautifully signed, written up with legalized cannabis splashed all over it. How do we keep that on the road? We needed funding. You can't put love and support in your tank to keep you driving around the country. It takes real money. It takes real fuel. So we were looking for a way of gaining extra support for the bus. And so by taking on this large warehouse factory space as a place to keep the bus, and that became the focal point. People would come along and be happy to be contributing either through their purchasing or by an entrance fee to the club. But it was a fun place. We've got pool table and, you know, ping pong tables, dart boards. There's a library. Lots of couches and coffee tables, beautiful fresh coffee, brewed coffee. And in the future, we'll even be bigger and more brighter and beautiful. We're going to actually have our own daiquiri-branded coffee that we will be selling openly, because it's not illegal, that people will be calling into our new premises, and coffee is going to be a key feature of that. I don't know, coffee and a joint seem to just go together, don't they?
Much like high tea.
Much like high tea. Personally, I prefer a cup of tea in a joint than a cup of coffee in a joint, but coffee shops like they've had in Holland for many, many years, there's nothing wrong with that model. Whatever it takes to allow consenting adults to consent together.
Well, this, again, takes it back to personal responsibility, because if you have a cannabis problem, and there are people that do have cannabis problems who maybe at some points commit crimes in order to obtain money to do so.
Well, cannabis
these are
is
very
not
small
responsible for
cannabis
that.
Is not
know,
responsible
crimes
for
are
that,
committed but. By criminals.
Yeah, exactly. And anybody who's got any kind of problem where they'd start to become criminal about it, I don't think that necessarily punishing them for their crimes per se is exactly what's going to help them. I think actually offering some sort of a treatment program so that they can understand what addiction is, how to take personal responsibility for themselves, that kind of thing. I mean, that's me personally.
Well, in the wider discussion, where there are those that say all drugs should be legally available but regulated, and that takes it out of the hands of the bad people. But I don't advocate one way or the other for a wide range of drugs. My personal campaign, my personal interest is cannabis. There is no scientific or moral reason why cannabis should be illegal, to the point where people that are involved in growing or selling usually incarcerated for some very long periods of time. There is no sound reason for that. And if that is the greatest change that we can make in life, that we can change those laws, then other drugs and the way they're controlled, that'll take care of itself in due course. So let's deal with the one that the majority of people who take illicit substances are using, and that is cannabis.
Let's think about statistics here, because I heard that about 85% of New Zealanders under the age of 25 have used cannabis, or between the ages of 18 and 25, sorry, have used cannabis somewhere around that region. And in the United States, I believe I read something in High Times magazine that 87% of cannabis users, illegal drug users, only use cannabis.
That's true. Cannabis is the most widely used illicit drug around the world. But, you know, I get a little bit annoyed sometimes with people talking about percentages and numbers of people. I think if there is one person in this country who consumes cannabis, and there is a law that says, if we catch you doing it, we will send you to jail, I think that law is wrong, and that it should not rely on majority support in order to have sound drug laws. What we need are members of parliament or politicians who are willing to make decisions based on sound scientific reasoning. And if there's nobody that wants to smoke it, so what? The law should reflect that there is no harm to be caused to the community by cannabis. In fact, the vast majority of harm that occurs in the community is caused by the law. I've spent a number of years in jail over the last... Look, since 1999, when I got busted in Australia for consuming cannabis... I have, in the last 15 years, had a total of 1 year where I have not been under state control, either in prison, on bail, or on remand awaiting trial. A total of 1 year. That's 4 months on one occasion. It is wrong, and it's an expensive nonsense and bad public policy that needs to change urgently. And fortunately, it is happening.
Well, I would hope that it happens a lot faster than it is. Have you noticed how with the impetulance of youth, you never think that things are getting done quite fast enough as people continually suffer day by day, you know? Like, yeah. You just think about all these people that are dying of cancer out there that have got no relief, going through chemo, that kind of thing, and this thing that alleviates so many of the negative symptoms. I mean, it's ironic, don't you think, that it's the doctors that are destroying health and so many times that they are trying to heal people, they're actually really hurting them and damaging them, in some cases permanently, and giving them nothing effective for the relief of the symptoms that they're causing.
I think that is a very sad situation. Fortunately, doctors are, in the main, intelligent, well-educated people, and when they are shown the truth about cannabis, oft times will just change their mind.
Now we have a caller into the studio here. Caller, you just rang my home phone here. I believe this might be one of our guests actually calling in today. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, hi, it's Sandy. Sorry, I didn't get your message until about a couple of minutes ago to give me your number. Thank you for having me on. I actually know the caller that you just had before, Dr. Green. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
I am the Coromandel Normal Rep for the Coromandel area, the entire Coromandel area. And
you're doing a fine job, Sandy.
Marijuana legalized because I have just been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And I believe that I have had it for about 15 years. I've been self-medicating for about 15 years, and I need to get into some sort of clinical trial involving multiple sclerosis and cannabis. They have told me that if I don't take their medication through the national health system, that I don't have very long to live. And basically, I have lost faith in their, you know, the normal medication, etc. I believe in medical cannabis, that it will help me. But the way that the laws are in New Zealand, I will be a criminal. You know, I probably already am a criminal for using cannabis. But I've spoken to my friend Billy McKee through Green Cross, and he said that I need to start eating it. Well, I can't find a supply of the stuff that I need to eat. I'm not talking about the juicy buds. I'm talking about cabbage, and I can't find any anywhere. And I don't know how to make it into the thing that I need to eat it for. And so I'm really desperate, you know, to get it legalized. And yeah, that's pretty much what I have to say.
All right. Well, thank you, Sandy, for calling in. One of the things I also wanted to talk to you about, and I think this is what we've been discussing on the show up until this point as well, is just exactly how much suffering and pain gets caused to people, not because they're bad people, but because the law is bad. And again, having access to medicine, isn't having access to appropriate medical treatment that's not prohibitively expensive and is proven to be effective like a human right or something? What do you think, Doctor?
I agree with you, Vinny. I hear stories such as Sandy's all the time as I've travelled around the country meeting with medical users and recreational users. I'm deeply saddened that the one medicine that can be so helpful, particularly for people like Sandy that suffer from multiple sclerosis. I have a number of friends that are sufferers of multiple sclerosis, and they get a great deal of relief, some more than others, but a great deal of relief from the use of cannabis. And to think that we won't allow that, and that in fact we would jail somebody for using cannabis for their medical condition, I think is one of the greatest evils perpetrated on mankind. So
I liken it to
we need to change this. I'm with you, Sandy.
I liken it, Sandy, to beating somebody up who's in a wheelchair. And you know how you look on people who do that kind of thing, you know, the beating up on the helpless? That's what this phenomenon really represents to me.
Yep. Look, Sandy, I'm with you. We think that the way things are unfolding around the world, and particularly here in New Zealand, that there is positive signs of change to cannabis laws. The fact that Peter Dunn, who has had his jackboot on the controlling of legalizing of cannabis for many years now, the fact that he's now a disgraced Member of Parliament and hopefully soon to be an ex-Member of Parliament, I think that's a major step forward. And we look with interest to see what the new minister will achieve. Will he be a little more open-minded and not be influenced by the pressure groups that come to bear when it comes to changing cannabis laws?
Mm. Sandy, have you ever heard the term the cannabis lobby, the pro-cannabis lobby? I only heard this term for the first time in the last month when this TV3 debate was on. I wasn't aware that there was an organised so-called pro-cannabis lobby, as in a lobbyist of some description. I thought it would just seem to be ordinary people with voluntary organisations and so on and so forth, such as Normal, that you yourself are a part of.
Yes. No, I actually haven't heard of a pro-cannabis lobby, but that is my plan, is to become one myself. I don't know how you actually lobby the Parliament, but my plan is to go down there to Parliament, hang out, try and tell people my story. You know, I'm physically well at the moment. I do have pins and needles in my hands, which in the past week has gotten worse. I've had friends and family say to me, "Oh, you're crazy. Take the medication. You're going to end up in a wheelchair." Well, while I can walk and I can talk and I can hopefully string words together to make sense, I'm going to go down there and possibly harass them. I don't want to. I'm a customer services background, so I want to just talk to people and tell them my story, and hopefully they'll listen. But my plan is to not take their medication until medical marijuana has been legalised. And so I'm trying to put pressure on the government and saying, look, you know, if you don't give me this, I'm probably going to die. I'll become a martyr for the cause. And they'll probably hold a candlelight vigil, and my mum said to me, well, you won't be around to see that, but I'll know that my friends in the legalised cannabis camp will take up my cause, you know.
And Sandy, you're much too important to sacrifice your life in that fashion, and it is important that you do keep talking to people. I have been saying for some years now that this fight is not going to be won in a minute or two or in a month or two. It's won by talking to people one-on-one. And ultimately, talking to the members of Parliament is the most important thing that you can be doing. So I support what you're doing. I encourage you to keep doing it. And
black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know. The way it's going to go.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Island Change Procrastination of New Zealand. And Dr. Green in studio is my very special guest, and he's just been showing me photos of their new facility, which I believe is the Chernobyl in pronunciation. Down in Tauranui there, with a large cafeteria, and they're going to be building a garage to park the buses under, you know, keep those puppies undercover and so on and so forth. And nice new place that you've got there, Doctor.
It's a wonderful place, and the fact that it hasn't been utilised for any useful purpose for some years now makes me feel really good that we have a positive role for this building in a location that's accessible from all over our country. So if you're visiting our country from anywhere around the world, then make a note. The Daiquiri is based in Taumarunui, right in the centre of the North Island. It's on one of the main roads between Auckland and Wellington. Feel free to call in. We open on the 19th of November, and we open 7 days a week from that time onwards. So we're looking forward to making some positive changes to our laws as we move forward in promoting cannabis, responsible cannabis use by medicinal users and recreational users.
Going to get some flyers popped up around the backpackers in New Zealand, you know. There's bound to be plenty of Euro trash who'd be keen to pop in and get score something. Because, in fact, that's something else that I noticed as well, is that a lot of travellers... I didn't mean to call you Euro trash. I'm sorry, guys. there's a lot of travellers from overseas who come here, and again, because it doesn't have a regulated market, they don't know where to find any ganja, and it's just kind of like luck of the draw, who they bump into, what they meet. And it would be nice if tourists could actually benefit from some kind of marketplace that's available to them.
Well, that's true. But I should point out and make this extremely clear, as I mentioned earlier, we are not going to be selling cannabis from these new premises. We don't want the police coming in and closing us down again. Frankly, we're going to be an information centre and a clearinghouse for activities in our cause. If that means that we might be able to assist people, well, who knows how things are going to unfold. But for the moment, our plan is that we're going to be the finest cafe in the country.
And it'd be a nice stop off on your way through, you know, kind of thing. Because I found a lot of people, when they go on long road trips, they always like to stop off at a cafe. Why not this one? Now, speaking of which, the whole concept of coffee shops and so on and so forth, what has the example of the Netherlands actually taught people about cannabis prohibition and a regulated market?
Oh, I think that the fact that the coffee shops in
Amsterdam,
but virtually every town and city in the Netherlands, Holland, there are coffee shops. It is a responsible approach, but it is still illegal in Holland. They allow small quantities of cannabis to be sold through coffee shops, but they don't allow anybody to grow it. So the growing of cannabis in Holland is still an illegal activity. And from time to time, you will see news of a major bust where a grow-op has been closed down. They have tried to improve their laws and regulations and faced extreme opposition from the United States in the main. So they've just carried on as they've been doing for some time and seeking to do the best for their community. And, you know, we're doing the same. And it will not be long, and America will realize that their drug laws and their drug war is based on nonsense and needs to be changed. And, you know, if Obama is listening to the show today, and he should be, this is American Freedom Radio, so President Obama from little old New Zealand down here in the bottom of the Pacific, here's a special plea. If you want to be remembered kindly by a population in 100 years or 200 years' time, then be the man that's responsible for changing evil cannabis prohibition laws. You know, because you've toked, that it is not a harmful substance, and you just have to stand up to the pressure groups and make these changes, not just for your own country, but it is your country that's dictating this evil policy around the world, and it is time to change, and you will gain a whole host of new friends if you step up to the mark and do what you know in your heart is right. Mm. So, President Obama, legalize. That's the call. Legalize and regulate.
Now, we have the caller lines open, so American listeners can now call in. And if you're calling from overseas, you just got to put in an 01 in before that to call into the United States. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 if you'd like to come on and talk about cannabis prohibition today. Other interesting elements within this course is also the great trauma. I mean, personally speaking, being arrested and then having lies told about you, even when you admit all of the wrongdoing, all of the alleged wrongdoing, you know, myself selling cannabis and so on and so forth, and then the police still manufacture evidence as court, even when they've got all the evidence that they need to convict you, just to trump up the charges. And this strikes me as one of the most interesting phenomenons is because the law is a lie, they have liars enforcing it.
Yep, that is a very sad indictment on our society. But when you are seeking to enforce bad laws, then they're usually enforced by bad people. And sometimes they're just blindly following or instructions. But there are many good police officers around the world, and the good ones understand that cannabis is not a bad thing, and if they can, they will turn that blind eye. But unfortunately, there's not enough of them, and the sooner we can change the law so that we can be part of regular society. You know, one of the sad things is that there is this looking down your nose at people. Oh, in the past, over the years, we've had different groups of society that have been the target. I mean, in my youth, the target were people like gay, before gay meant homosexual. When gay meant happy, it was almost okay to attack homosexuals physically. And if the police came along, they didn't take too much interest because, you know, you're a horrible, nasty, gay person that doesn't deserve the backing of the law because you're actually doing something that's illegal. Now, that was the approach during the 50s and the 60s when I was a young fella. But today, we understand, we're better educated, that we're all part of life's wondrous melting pot. We're all human beings. We're all entitled to freedom of choice with matters that affect our own personal well-being and our own lifestyle. And the sooner we include cannabis and cannabis users in that freedom of choice and freedom of life choice, then the better.
Mm. So it affects almost everybody in society, you know, from the top to the bottom. I remember I got up in front of crowds a couple of times and I asked, okay, show of hands, if you know somebody who has ever used cannabis, you know, pretty much every single hand goes up.
Yep.
All right, now keep your hands up if you want to see any of those people go to jail. Every single hand goes down. Time to change the law.
Correct. Nobody wants to see people be sent to jail. Occasionally you will find some people that say, well, if you're selling illegal drugs or producing illegal drugs, then you should go to jail. But they don't understand that it's a supply and demand situation. Mm. We all enjoy a toke, and if I can't buy a joint from someone, then I'm going to grow it myself because the people that are in the cannabis culture just don't see that the law has any bearing on their lives other than as a negative influence. So you're not going to stop it by declaring that it's bad because we all know that's a lie.
Is it not is the law not broken hundreds of thousands of times a day? I mean, like, you say you've got three people in a circle. Each time somebody passes a joint to another person, that's supplying cannabis or possession for supply and so on and so
forth. By its very nature, the fact that it's illegal means that I constantly am breaking the law. Every time I roll a joint, every time I take a toke, every time I pass it to a friend or somebody that's around me, those are all illegal activities and capable of individual charges. Any one of which can force me to be incarcerated. Look, I was a free man for 9 days last year, and the police came and raided us and effectively closed down our business. I'm still fighting those charges. They want to lock me up. Maximum penalty at this time is 14 years.
Right.
And this is because they found some butter in our premises. Butter. Yes, that's right, butter. That had been mixed with cannabis for the purposes of baking baked goods. Now, there are plenty of people that cannot smoke, and so they can eat medicine. They can eat a cake, a cookie, and in order to make a cookie, you need a bit of butter that's been mixed with cannabis. And the police found some of this butter in the fridge, and I'm now facing 14 years imprisonment because they said that's illegal and it's bad, bad, and we caught you red-handed, and it's just all nonsense. And, you know, so the fight goes on. We will fight this in the courtrooms. We will fight it on the doorstep of the parliament. We will fight it everywhere that there's anybody reasonable and sensible willing to listen.
Dr. Green, ladies and gentlemen, the Winston Churchill of cannabis.
We'll fight him on the beaches. Hey.
Well, see, ironically,
that sounds a bit pirate-like. I didn't mean that.
See, ironically, you're actually still fighting a form of fascism, aren't you?
Well, yes. I don't like to put labels on it in that sense. What we're really fighting is ignorance. Ignorance and prejudice. When people abuse me because I am advocating cannabis law reform and I get abused, I'm a hippie, I'm a dirty hippie, I'm unemployed dirty hippie, all of these labels that people throw at me is only thrown at me because opponents to legalizing have no actual sensible argument to it. It's blind prejudice, and they think that if they abuse me and call me dirty names, that somehow that makes them feel better and somehow our argument will disappear. The fact is we're the ones that have science on our side, and we are winning. Mm. One vote at a time, we are winning.
Well, the only tool that they really have in their box here in terms of argument is more or less just logical fallacy. So there's the appeal to ridicule. Oh, you're a stoner, therefore you're silly. There's the appeal to authority. Well, it's illegal for a reason. It must be. So on and so forth. And ad hominem attacks, just insulting you, just in general. And I recall an argument, more like I was just being told this by my uncle, who was very, very drunk at the time and scabbing a cigarette off me at the time whilst telling me that I'll never amount to a whole lot because I smoke cannabis. Yep.
Thank you, Uncle Bludger, stealing my cigarettes, you drunken bum. Yep, I understand exactly the hypocrisy that people that are closest to us are indulging in, but it's just reflecting the approval that society gives to the individuals by having these nasty laws. You know, homosexuals were abused and ridiculed years ago because it was against the law to do that. Today, it's against the law to smoke a joint, so we're today's target. Tomorrow, it'll be somebody else. Mm. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. We don't support that. But the sooner that we legalize cannabis, the sooner that we can be treated as equal citizens that we're entitled to be treated as.
Mm. It would be rather nice if I could not be insulted or attacked or instantly switched off because of my personal use of cannabis, because it has no bearing on that whatsoever. Okay, you take people who are really talented, very successful. The argument is, oh, if you smoke cannabis, you'll always be a loser. Okay, didn't Bob Dylan smoke cannabis? Isn't he like a massive musician and stuff like that? Aren't there copious quantities of musicians, presidents of the United States that have smoked cannabis?
Oh, don't get me started on names, Vinny.
Oh, yeah.
There's hardly a musician. Do you know what sort of music would exist if we didn't have cannabis available for musicians?
Really terrible stuff. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. 218.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. The travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I smoke everywhere, man. I smoke everywhere.
He smokes on the cannabis. It's the mobile smoking lounge, ladies and gentlemen, coming to a town.
I smoke in Parliament grounds, man. You were actually allowed to smoke there. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
The Speaker of the House.
Is that how the politicians get away with it?
The Speaker of the House said to the police that if they stay behind the barriers, meaning us protesters, if we stay behind the barriers and there's no violence on the lawns of Parliament, then there should be no arrests. So we've taken that as being permission to consume cannabis in Parliament. Mm. So we're down in Wellington next week, next Wednesday, 4 o'clock. We're going to prepare and have a big smoke up come 4:20, because that's what we do. Mm. And we will be encouraging Parliament to treat us like human beings.
Well, that's interesting. Now, speaking of which, there was a point that I wanted to raise about music and cannabis. And indeed, this is how it started to get into the mainstream American culture. And in fact, I believe one of the very reasons why it got made illegal was racism. And black musicians and so on and so forth using cannabis, going out and doing the great music and so on and whatnot. And then you think... And you made an interesting point in the last segment there, Dactyl, and we've only got a few minutes left. So if anybody wants to call in, 218-339-8525 is a thing. But, you know, just think of just a few off the top of my head. If cannabis didn't exist, musicians that wouldn't exist either. Bob Marley, Cypress Hill, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, Rolling Stones, The Beatles. I mean, can you think of any greater influence on culture in general of any other substance? I mean, come on. It's almost essential for human life.
Well, it is essential for human life, and the fact is that we have cannabinoid receptors in our brain, and cannabis is a plant that was designed for human beings to consume. And the fact that there are so many, and it's not just musicians, but talented people, artists of all kinds. It allows a human being, an individual, to go places with their mind that is not possible without the mind-altering substance of cannabis. It is a mind-opening substance. So, look, there's many, many wonderful paintings and poems and songs, music generally, movies, you name it. Look at anybody that's involved in these activities creatively and you will usually see cannabis somewhere in that person's life. Mm. So, yeah, it's had a major influence on the creativity of talented artists around the world.
come a long way from the days of reefer madness and the very poor quality filmmaking that you'd expect from people who don't use cannabis.
Yeah, well, reefer madness, unfortunately, still rears its head from time to time. I was interviewed a couple of years ago by a television station here, and I agreed to do the in-depth interview on the grounds that it was a serious approach to our cause. I would be happy to bare my soul if it was straight up and down, and specifically said there should be no reefer madness. And what did they call the item when it went to air? Reefer madness. So it's still out there. The media still tell lies. And that's why you, Vinny, with your various activities and the time that I've known you over many years now, whilst I don't always agree with you, we have had some most fascinating debates about all sorts of crazy subjects. And it's important that people like you are out there giving us alternatives. And for that, on behalf of mankind, I thank you, Vinny Mann, for a wonderful job.
Well, thank you very much. I do my best. You know, and it occurs to me, you know, there's not just one method of suppression that's going on through society. And it's like everybody's got their focal points. And I find it's that when people take a focus and they make a mission out of their life, that's when they truly become effective people in accomplishing their goals. And this is what I believe you've done for the cannabis movement like no other. In this country's history in terms of that. And my goal is essentially not specifically just cannabis or specifically just, you know, conspiracy theories or anything like that, but there's a massive spectrum of subjects and suppressions that we're all affected by that are simply not covered to any great extent in the media. And more to the point, it's always demonized and it's not friendly. It's an attack-based interviewing system. And I prefer to give people some comfort, give them some space and give them some coverage, no matter what their topic might be, just so long as they're an active and effective person in that particular area of their research, because it makes for great radio.
And even if they're wrong.
Even if they're wrong.
Because if they're wrong, then you have the opportunity to point out their wrongness to them, and that creates a debate and a meaningful education process for your listeners. So on you, mate, on you.
Well, see, the vast majority of my guests, much like yourself, are people who are coming on and saying that the establishment is wrong. And they'd be right, you know.
Yes, well, you might be right. But let's debate that, shall we?
Yes. Because, you know, you've got to think about institutionalisation and having actually been to prison, I was wondering what the psychological effects are. Did you change as a person and how you interact with other people since being incarcerated? Has there been some kind of a psychological trauma visited upon you that still affects you to this day, that kind of thing?
Oh, I think there is a trauma of sorts when you're in jail. I've done a few jail times now, and as short as overnight in a police cell, and up to 3 years in prison for all cannabis-related activity. What was your point again?
I'm just wondering if you could actually relay to people what kind of things you've actually gone through and how it's changed you just in your daily life.
Well, when I was released June last year, after 11 and a half months incarcerated, I would have to say that the term post-traumatic stress syndrome probably would be close to the mark. The way I felt for weeks and weeks afterwards. I mean, you're released from this sterile environment, which is full of, at times, psycho, crazy people. Not all of them. Many of them, of course, have committed some sort of crime when they've been under the influence of, substances, alcohol or whatever. And mostly they're pretty decent people. There are some real criminals in jail, but in the main, they're just ordinary people that get caught in the wrong place at the wrong time doing something that many of us are doing anyway, like a drunk driver, for example. You know, we all there but for the grace of God go I moment. But look, there is nothing. I cannot think of a single redeeming feature which I would encourage people to go to jail to experience. There is nothing about jail that is worthy of experiencing. It is where we put our bad people. It's a little bit like children at school, go stand in the corner, put this dunce's hat on. That was the way we used to do it, this pointed cap. You were the big D on it. You were the dunce. You were the dumbass. And you were sent to stand in the corner until you learnt the error of your ways. And in a more sophisticated way, we now have society that takes people that enjoy having a smoke, enjoy having a toke or growing a plant, growing flowers, for goodness sake, they think, well, you're a naughty boy, we're going to put you in the corner. But in this instance, we call our corner prison. And you will go there for various lengths of time, and following which, you know, come out and get back on with your life. The problem is that the actual effect of going to jail can mean for many people the loss of their family, their loved ones. And I don't mean just separation from them. Their marriages break up through the stress and strains of this enforced separation. It can be a traumatic time. Children lose their fathers. The consequences of being sent to jail are irrecoverable in many instances. So jail, prison should be kept for those truly bad people, and it should never be used to seek to control drug laws or drug consumption. That is a health issue, not a criminal issue. And I think there's a recognition of that around the world. It's starting to move more in as a health issue now. And that's good. That's I applaud that. Because, as I said before, there is no redeeming features about prison. It's just a bad scene.
This is true. Now, we've come to the end of the show, Dancer, and I just wanted to recount one instance, I believe, when one of your supporters got a letter back from the minister saying that the reason why cannabis is illegal is because it might be linked to bronchitis. And you made the point, a very poignant observation, how is being sent to prison going to help protect me from bronchitis?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
No, I don't get it either. And the reasoning that politicians give, particularly in this country, do not stand up to scrutiny. So it's time to change the law. It's time to be positive and be a happy country.